First Speaker, Mike C.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mike. I'm an addict. And I was asked to read something, but I'm sure that the chairperson of this meeting doesn't know I can't see a damn thing without my glasses. And I'm at a point in my recovery where when the optometrist said that I needed bifocals, I was asking him about color contact bifocals. So you see, ain't no glasses, no way around. Okay, and I have no intention on reading anything, so I'm going to give this my best shot. Speaker statement. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone, wow, who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively in our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope in recovery. That's the speaker statement, y'all. This is my statement. Probably about 10 to 15 minutes ago, I got really nervous. I got that rush of anxiety that comes from the understanding of the responsibility that I know that I have when I'm asked to speak anywhere for Narcotics Anonymous. So, there are many people who know me here. As a matter of fact, there's someone here who was here to greet me at my first meeting. And I didn't expect her to be here, but she put me in touch with the power of this program. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So this is a big responsibility. And so this is what I would call big boy time. Many times, man, I'm one of those people now that believes that if the program has been that good to you, it really isn't about how big your house is. It really isn't about how well you're doing. But the message that continues to save all of our lives is that there is hope. And I forgot. Let me thank the Chesapeake and Potomac Regional Programming Committee for taking the risk. They seem to have a lot of confidence in a crazy-ass addict. Someone who you never really know what's going to come out of their mouth. You never know what they're going to say or what they're going to do. This is me. But some way, because of the principles of this program, and the power of our message, and the people that have helped me in my lives, they trust me. So the other person that's here that I want to thank is my lover.
Give it all up.
Now, there are probably about a handful of y'all. that know what it's like to be with someone, call them your lover, your mate, your spouse, your wife, your husband, whatever, during the day, out loud, and know that when you go home, it's the same person that you're still going to call your lover. My commitment is to myself, and as a result of that, I'm able to commit to my lover. Some people in here know that I did not know how to not just be with one person, but I didn't know how to be honest with anyone. So for him to be here is not about me. You know, it's just a testament about what this program and our high power does when we're willing to accept the principles and practice them in our affairs. So, I, like I said, man, the thing that I was thinking about when I started getting nervous was someone's life is on the line right now. We laugh, we joke, but the disease of addiction had me in a position where I did not want to live. And I did not want to live before I ever started using a drink or a drug. So I'm grateful that our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. Because if it was just no using, I probably would be dead. I did not know how to live with the way my defects of character were controlling my life. So I'm not going to say very much about using. They already had me read that long old story and stuff, so that's the setup. Like, don't go back to 1976 and take us through every drug you use, okay? So I'm not going to do that. But what is very important, what is really important, is that before I ever used a drink or a drug, I have been sexually molested by my minister. And I did not know how to defend myself. I did not know how to talk about what I felt because I didn't know what I felt. It was through learning how to share in this program and people helping me understand myself that I understand now that I felt shame. I understand that somehow because of that experience and being raped by someone that I called my lover, I have a different definition now, obviously. I became a person that did not know what to do with the abuse that I was experiencing. Now, I'm also a person that somehow, man, I didn't know how to really survive in the world. And my family, man, we didn't talk about nothing. And when I say we didn't talk about nothing, we didn't talk about nothing that looked bad. We didn't talk about nothing that sounded bad. We didn't talk about nothing that seemed bad, unless it was about somebody else. Now, I can talk about a person from the tip of their head to the bottom of their toes. But it wasn't until I got here to this program that Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to talk about me. And so I hope that what I have to say helps somebody this day in their recovery to just not use today. It's powerful what God does for me through somebody else by just listening to them share. So anyway, it was something else I was getting ready to say, and then my mind just went somewhere. It started racing. But the important thing is that this topic, feel, deal, and heal, is my story. When I first started using drugs, I really thought it was the solution to my problem. I didn't know how to associate with people regularly. I was accustomed to being talked about in my face, not behind my back, but I was accustomed to being called all kind of punks and sissies. I didn't know how to play sports like other boys. As a matter of fact, I was much more comfortable playing jacks. I was much more comfortable jumping rope. I was much more comfortable doing my sister's hair. I was much more comfortable hanging with the girls. And I began to adopt role models like Batgirl. Now, I know who I am today. I know in and out who I am today. But when I tell you Batgirl was my role model and Supergirl was my role model, it was really because superheroes never got beat. Superheroes knew how to protect themselves and knew how to protect other people. I lived in a home, man. I loved my mother dearly. And a part of my healing process was looking at my life honestly and letting go of the resentment and blame that I had. My mother didn't know how to handle raising a child like me. She was out a lot. You know, she did her best. She worked two jobs, man. But she liked to gamble. And she loved the clubs. And she loved the dress. And she was my role model. I remember one time, the guy that was living in my house, who's my sister's father, we were all at a picnic. And he had brought his other girlfriend to the picnic. And me and my two sisters and my mother were at the picnic and all her friends and all that. We was all there, right? And, you know, when we got ready to leave the picnic, we were all in the car getting ready to pull out. And he had started the car. And my mother pulled out a 2x4 with a nail on the end of it and knocked the shit out of him on his head. So we're going to fast forward because the reason that is significant is because in my relationships in recovery, if the police were not involved, I didn't believe that you loved me. There was so much insanity that you had to constantly prove to me that you loved me. And the way that you proved that you loved me was the way that I decided that you would need to prove that. So if that meant you needed to work long hours, if that meant you needed to be at my every beck and call, if that meant that you needed to have the answer to every single problem in my life, you were responsible. And so one of the things, man, that I had to take a look at and heal from was sick relationships. And not only were they sick, but they were sick because I was the one that was creating them. My role models, man, were people that liked fast money. I was attracted to pimps. And I liked pimps because I really believed that they took care of their girls. And one of my secrets was I didn't know my father. And I remember at a very young age people saying stuff like, that boy needs to get a man in his life. or he ain't going to be nothing but a little sissy. And I was sensitive. I was tender. And I had been hurt. And so I grew up with a lot of confusion. And drugs allowed me to put on a character, a personality, a face that could survive in public. So from the first time I used to the last time I used, my goal was to be out. It wasn't just to socialize with other people, but the goal was not to remember. If somebody told me what I did last night, and then they say, you were so crazy, you did blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? I could stick my chest out. If I woke up in someone else's home and didn't know how I got there, I would think to myself, damn, I pulled this motherfucker. I pulled the shit out of him. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't in touch with the real reality that I didn't care about my life. I wasn't in touch with the reality that my self-esteem and self-worth were zero. So these are some of the things that the process of recovery began to help me heal from. I remember my first meetings. And God is so awesome that I was sleeping around with this guy, man, that I was sleeping around with this guy in his car. By this time, I was sleeping on somebody's couch. I had moved from New York to Washington, D.C. area, and I was sleeping on the couch next to a man who had full-blown AIDS, and he was in a bed. Now, that might have been an opportunity for me to start talking about being HIV positive, but it was too painful. That might have been an opportunity to talk about the fact that I was facing 10 years of federal charges for fraud, and I was guilty. But where I come from, you don't talk about what goes on with you. You push it down. You keep pushing it down until it seems like you're all right. So anyway, man, I had become so devalued that the only way that I knew how to relate to people was sexually. And I was messing around with this guy, man, and I was, you know, trying to get my next place to stay. So I told him, you know, I was facing fed charges. This was my second fed charge. I needed a place to stay. I needed some help, you know, and my lawyer told me to go to some NA meetings. He said, okay, I'll take you to some meetings. And he took me to the group that was my home group for 15 years of my recovery. Come Tuesday, I'll be acknowledging 18 years clean. The reason that's important is because I remember having clean time, but not believing that this program could work for me. There were aspects of my life that were off limits. Somehow, man, I remember listening to people in meetings share how good they felt about being clean. And in my gut, I felt ashamed secretly because I wasn't experiencing the joy of recovery. I believe there's somebody in here that's not experiencing the joys of recovery. And the solution is in our steps. And I don't recite the steps, and I don't go all up and down them, but I'm hopefully going to talk about some things that let you know that I have a working knowledge of the 12 steps in my life. For real, man, it was really hard, man. It was really, really hard getting honest about not wanting to live, even though I was clean. It was hard getting honest about the fact that I was 24 years old, and I didn't know what to do with my life. I thought I was really smart, man. I could read. I could get jobs. You know, I knew how to slightly socialize with people, you know what I'm saying, to give them the impression that I was intelligent. But I didn't know how to reveal. I didn't know how to let people in to get the help that I needed until I got to this program. So that guy brought me to my first meeting. And actually, it wasn't the first meeting. He took me to a dance first. And a lot of times, man, the dance is the only place that some of us have to go some nights. And when he brought me to that dance, man, it's this group called Trust Gay N.A. Way. God knew that I might not make it if he hadn't to drop me off in the special interest meeting. So these people, man, they love me. They let me walk around and stuff and do the secretary's report, and they trusted me with money, you know, even though I was a thief, you know, because I was a thief. And when I got in touch with the reason that I stole was because I did not know how to talk about my anger, I began to heal in this process because I began to take the risk to talk about my anger. And I learned how to stop stealing. You know, it was sort of like stop dealing with your insecurities and inadequacies, and you won't need to take something from somebody. Learn how to get honest and ask for what you want for yourself and for your life. And then you won't have to envy other people who seem free. Learn how to take a risk and be vulnerable. Let people know that you need help. And God will make a way. I didn't really have a belief in a higher power because my first experience was this minister that was a friend of our families. And it's through the healing process that I was not only able to forgive him, but able to have dinner with him. And we never discussed what took place. But he had already been forced to make his amends because he had been locked up for committing the same crime on another child. But God luckily gave me some clean time and gave me a chance to work on me first before he brought us back together. Because had he brought us back at a different time in my recovery, I would have been running around the meeting talking about him and what he did to me. But what happened was, by the time I saw him, I was in my 30s. I wasn't 6 years old anymore. And I had learned through the 12 steps that the reason that we have a 10th step is so we can stay in today with who's responsible for our recovery. And in order to have ongoing recovery, you've got to put the focus on yourself, Michael. You've got to show up and take a look at, if you feel fucked up, what part do you play in how you feel right now? Is it an attitude, an idea, or a concept that you believe is right but it's causing you pain? What I found, man, is most of my pain in recovery has come from the unwillingness of letting go of old ideas and attitudes that do not suit me. There's a freedom in this process. You know, and I'll never forget, man, my first sponsor, Tina Teasley. She used to always say, talking to save your life. And, man, she was my first sponsor. And I didn't know what a sponsor was for. You know what I thought a sponsor was for. You know what I'm saying? That's supposed to be the person that if you need some money and stuff, that's who you go to. You know what I'm saying? That if you need somebody to tell a lie on a job, that you done put on a job application or something, your sponsor is the person that they're supposed to call. You know what I'm saying? But it's like our literature says,
My relationship with my sponsor became my first healthy relationship in recovery. I began to follow her everywhere. They used to talk about me like a dog. They used to call me stuff, Lil Tina. Where you going, Lil Tina? Where you going? You know. But I remember listening to her share. And it could be like one or two little sentences that she would share that I would connect with, that I would say, damn, that's me. And I didn't think that it was ever possible that I could do what she's sharing about right now. You know what I mean? To be able to hold your head up and walk in dignity. To be able to say that you're HIV positive, and then to be able to ask other people before you have sex with them, what is your HIV status? Not be all scared and be, oh, I'm HIV positive. I don't know if I should say nothing to them about it and all that. What I'm saying is now, like, my life is so important that I got to find out what you got. Because I learned how to take care of me. So this is all a part of the healing process. But the healing comes from first taking a look at what the hell is really going on. You know, for me, man, I was clean and I didn't know how to live. You know, I had a dishonest personality because I was so afraid of being found out. I was so afraid of being shunned. I was so afraid. I had no self-acceptance, no self-acceptance. You know, and our literature talks about how the lack of self-acceptance is an issue for recovering addicts. You know, and again, it talks about how the 12 steps are the solution. So I needed a sense of faith that was different than what I had ever experienced before. I needed a sense of trust that was different than anything I had ever experienced before. And so what began to happen, man, was I started to take risks and talk about the fact that I didn't know about medications. I didn't know how to get educated. You know, I didn't know how to sit down and talk honestly with someone and just say, hey, listen, you know, I'm HIV positive. You know, can you handle that? I was so needy for acceptance that I would need to lie first. You know, God has a way of putting everything together so that not only will you feel, you will deal and you will heal. I didn't know my father. And that was a big source of shame for me. And I had to go through the steps a few times and get to the point in my recovery where I wasn't choosing men to protect me anymore. I had to get to a point in my recovery where I wasn't looking for them to read my mind and know what they were supposed to do because I wasn't taking responsibility for my own issues. You know, I had to get to a point where I was willing to love, not just in intimate relationships with people that I want to be hooked up with, but take the risk to just love people and feel the pain of the possibility of them not loving you. You know, like, we say stuff around here like, I don't care what people say, I care. Sometimes people in here have hurt my feelings. But I don't spend a lot of time on that because they say it starts and ends with me. So if what somebody else says is hurting my feelings, then obviously I'm holding on to a phony image that don't suit me no more. And what am I going to do, let go of the image or cuss them out? Meanwhile, they can continue to talk about me. I can get better with me.
So that if they do continue to talk about me, I can walk on down the hallway with my head up.
You know what I'm saying? And what that has allowed me to do, man, it has allowed me to go anywhere in the world. I remember the first time my job sent me to Paris. A hoe. Someone who dreamed through TV. Someone who was dependent on someone else to do something for my life in order to feel like I had something to offer. You know, like I was like a parasite. You know, I would do a whole bunch of stuff for you so that you feel guilty enough to stay with me. But you were really the one that had the power. I was in Paris at a business meeting. Now, it's not about that. It's about the fact that I was the person that could not stand to be alone. I mean, when they said, get your own place and learn how to be in it, I was the one that had to struggle nights. Nights after night after night after night. Learning how not to call the chat line. Learning how not to have those 3 o'clock in the morning knocks on the window. Or where they throw rocks up and stuff because they know that it's a good possibility you'll open the door. Now, I could take the other people's character and talk about what they do. But the truth was, I accepted what was going on because I could not live with myself. So when I was in Paris, I was able to sleep in a huge bed all alone and not have a need for company because my higher power had revealed to me, I got you. How he revealed it was my disease went from HIV to AIDS. I began to get hospitalized. The doctors would say stuff like, we don't really know what to say is happening with you. So we're just going to observe you for a couple days. And I remember nights laying in the bed, man, and somehow because of the simplicity of this process and the grace of God, man, I could lay in a hospital bed, man, covered in sores from my waist down and say, thank you, God. You've given me a good life. If I don't go no further than this, this was much more than I expected or deserved. The fact that I didn't get my time alone, because I was guilty of all the crimes I committed. Now, I don't know about nobody else, okay? I didn't even, by the time I got here, baby, I didn't even have no game left. You know what I'm saying? So he took me from the ground up, from the floor. And brought me to another place. But anyway, man, a year ago, by the grace of God and through doing steps, man, I met my father. And when I met my father, man, God is so awesome. He was ready to meet me. I can't tell y'all the whole story about how it went down. But anyway, I called him and I told him who I was. He said, man, he said, I've been needing to talk to you because I got some stuff to tell you. I said to him, I said, look, man, I just want to meet you because I just want you to know what you got because I'm a hell of a dude. So, when we met, what he did was he did a fifth step with me. And he took me all the way back and brought me all the way up to today. He's 71 years old. And he shared with me like we share with each other. He shared the exact nature of his wrongs. And the blessing, the healing, was the fact that I was able to listen to his fifth step because I had done so many fifth steps and listened to so many fifth steps in this process that I didn't know that the higher power was preparing me for my own blessing later on. I have three brothers. I'm the oldest. By the time I met my brothers, man, I was able to have healthy relationships with men regardless of their sexual preference. Every time I kiss a man, it don't mean I'm setting up the stage for what I like to do. What it means is that I generally love you. And what's more important in my healing, man, I'm not afraid to love. I am not afraid to love. And that was something that locked me up for so long because I was afraid to just give. So, I got the 5 minute sign about 10 minutes ago. And I'm just warming up now, you know. I'm gonna have to go to a marathon or something, you know what I'm saying? Get the rest of this stuff on out, you know. But, you know, the last thing I want to say before I turn it over to Ron, man, is that there have been points in my recovery where I was so complacent, but at the same time in so much emotional pain that I did not believe it could get any better. And every time I was at that point, I took the risk to trust my higher power and incorporate another tool of the program. Because the 12 steps are the solution to all our problems. I don't care what it is, if it's a relationship. Everything that's an issue for me, I found out is spiritual in nature. And the ability to practice a spiritual principle to get through it is continuing to save my life. Thanks for letting me share. My name is Mike. I'm an addict.